blazed. No one has ever attempted such a distance before. 300 feet from field goal to field goal. What's going through your mind right now?
You look really good. I got lucky.
Luck don't cover, JB. You got an angel looking after you.
Maybe it's something else.
All you have to do is sigh.
Forget about family. Forget about friends. Forget about love.
You will be the rider for as long as you live.
I'm not doing it.
You have no choice.
Story goes that he'll be normal during the day, but at night, in the presence of evil, the rider takes over.
You deserve a second chance.
Blackheart's coming to create hell on Earth, and you have the power he needs.
Stay away from anybody he can use against him.
Roxanne.
Don't you care about me at all?
You have to leave now.
I'm not going anywhere.
Any man who sells his soul for love has the power to change the world.
I could smell your fear.
I'm going to take this curse and use it against you.
No! He had this rad chopper. It was all flames and stuff. His face was a skull, and it was on fire.
On fire?
Like...
Looking for someone.
I'm the only one who can walk in both worlds. I'm Ghost Rider.
You all right?
Yeah, I'm good. I feel like my skull's on fire, but I'm good.
Hello and welcome to The Complete Works, an in-depth look into the career and filmography of Nicolas Cage. My name is Mike Smith. Joining me, as always, on this journey into the depths of true cagedom is my friend, co-host, and fellow cageaholic,
Mike DiCriscio.
How are you doing today, Mike?
I'm doing very well today.
Yes.
I'm going to project an image of being okay in hopes that I one day become that. That's a glimpse into my life that listeners didn't need, but you're welcome.
That was a very dark moment to start off the podcast. So
let's it only get better from here.
Yeah, let's shift talk from your depressing personal life, Mike, and move on into a discussion of a Nicolas Cage film, because that is the actual subject of this podcast. Mm-hmm. Now, the movie we're talking about today, kind of a major film in Nicolas Cage's filmography, I would say. I think we've discussed in the past on this show that Nicolas Cage is a huge comics fan, right? When looking to shed the Coppola name, when he broke into acting, he took a name from one of his favorite comic heroes, Luke Cage. That's where Nicolas Cage comes from. He has a son named Kal-El, the birth name of Superman. That's his son's name.
Wow.
And he even has a tattoo of a flaming skull on his arm, inspired by the hero of one of his favorite comics and the movie we're talking about today. It's Ghost Rider, Mike. We made it.
Okay. We can give that time. We can give that reaction to this movie. Sure.
I don't know. This always just felt like a big Nicolas Cage movie for me. I don't know. Have you felt that way about Ghost Rider in the past?
Yeah, it's a very interesting, like, weird watershed moment, I think, in comic book movies. It's so close to the kind of revolution that has happened with them that it's often forgot about, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I have a little bit about that that I'll talk about in a minute. Now, Cage, of course, has flirted with being in superhero movies in the past. You know, he was famously cast as Superman in the never-meant-to-be project Superman Lives, which was written by Kevin Smith and would have been directed by Tim Burton. And that's one of my great what-if movies. Like, if I was in a parallel dimension where that movie exists, like, I would watch it, like, a lot.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
He was also briefly considered to play the Green Goblin in Sam Raimi's Spider-Man movie before Willem Dafoe got the part, and that would have been a hell of a thing to see.
Yeah.
I would love to see that movie as well. And like a lot of Marvel heroes, the development of Ghost Rider goes back a long time, with rumblings as early as 1992 that it was something in development. And, you know, at that point, Marvel in the 90s, like mid-90s, early 2000s, they kind of sold off all their comic book properties to different studios. Fox got the X-Men, Sony got Spider-Man. Ghost Rider was a Sony property. And at one point, David S. Goyer had written a script, and Stephen Norrington, the director of another Marvel film, Blade, was attached to direct this movie. Johnny Depp expressed interest in playing Ghost Rider, and Eric Bana was actually considered for the role before he was cast in Ang Lee's Hulk. He got that one instead. But finally, after he campaigned for the role, Nicolas Cage was cast as Johnny Blaze / Ghost Rider in 2003 with writer-director Mark Steven Johnson. And in 2007, Ghost Rider was released into theaters. So now superheroes are kind of synonymous with blockbuster cinema today. We talk about them a lot on Film Bookcast. Like almost every film news, we have some kind of superhero news to discuss. Yep. And it seems like every third movie we review is a superhero movie.
Yeah, that's very true.
On that show. But the mid-2000s were kind of a crapshoot in terms of the superhero movies that were coming out. You know, there was great influential superhero movies from that era, the Sam Raimi Spider-Mans, Batman Begins, the original X-Men trilogy. But there were just as many ones that weren't considered so hot. Fantastic Four, Catwoman, Blade Trinity, Elektra. You know, the next year, in 2008, both Iron Man and The Dark Knight would be released. And those two movies would change the superhero movie landscape and modern blockbusters as we know it.
Wow. I didn't realize it was within a year.
Yeah,
you missed it by that much.
Exactly. Literally the next year. Now, Ghost Rider tends to get lumped in with the films that weren't so hot in that period. And I would say, sure, you know, it's not like it's a Christopher Nolan or a Sam Raimi movie. Although at points, I feel like it tries like hell to be a Sam Raimi movie.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But I will tell you that I saw this movie on opening night with my friend when we were maybe 13 or 14 years old. And I had a fucking blast with it back then, man.
Holy crap.
And I still maintain, if you can't get at least some enjoyment out of Nicolas Cage transforming into a flaming skeleton monster that rides a motorcycle, then I don't think you're listening to the right podcast.
Mm-hmm. I don't think you're living.
Exactly. Now, this was actually director Mark Steven Johnson's second crack at adapting a Marvel comic, because he was also the director of 2003's Daredevil with Ben Affleck, a movie which I also kind of defend a little bit. I think it's not that bad. And I haven't seen it since I was a kid, so I don't really remember it that well. But I remember having some fun with it. Colin Farrell is fun as Bullseye. Michael Clark Duncan is great as Kingpin in that movie. But he was also the screenwriter behind Grumpy Old Men, Grumpier Old Men, and and Jack Frost in 98. And recently directed a heist movie called Finding Steve McQueen with Forest Whitaker and William Fichtner, which has yet to be released. Are you a fan of Jack Frost, Mike? I saw your eyes kind of like light up when you...
is that the, like, Michael Keaton or... No, wait, hold on. Which one is Jack Frost? I'm very confused now.
There are two Jack Frosts. One of those with Michael Keaton. It's like the heartwarming snowman movie. One's the killer snowman movie. I'm pretty sure it's the Michael Keaton one that he used.
I mean, I'm not 100% positive, but no, it's just a movie I remembered. That's all.
Yeah, no, it's he did Jack Frost. So Ghost Rider stars Nicolas Cage as Johnny Blaze and Ghost Rider, and Matt Long from Private Practice appears as young Johnny Blaze during the film's opening 20 minutes. Now, Eva Mendes plays Blaze's love interest, Roxanne Simpson, while Raquel Alessi plays young Roxanne. You may recognize Raquel Alessi as the title character in the Whitest Kids You Know movie, Miss March. Do you remember Whitest Kids You Know? That was a huge sketch group for a little while.
I mean, yeah, I remember their sketch comedy. I don't remember that they had a movie.
Yep, that was
the more you know.
And Wes Bentley is here, man, just hamming it up as the film's villain, Blackheart. And Sam motherfucking Elliott is in this movie.
That's the most excited anyone's ever been to say the name Sam Elliott.
Are you not a Sam Elliott fan?
No, I mean, I am. Just have never heard so much gusto behind delivery of the name Sam Elliott.
I love Sam Elliott, man. So I was pretty excited to remember that he was in this movie playing Carter Slade / the original Ghost Rider. He also provides the film's opening and closing narration. And it's also his second Marvel movie after appearing as General Ross in Ang Lee's Hulk movie as well. Also in this movie, Donald Logue Rogue from shows like Grounded for Life, Terriers, Gotham, and my personal favorite, a very short-lived sitcom called The Knights of Prosperity. He plays Cage's friend Mac in this movie. The Knights of Prosperity, by the way. That was a really fun sitcom. I think it aired on ABC for like less than one season and got canceled, but I remember really liking it. It was about a group of thieves who decided to rob Mick Jagger. And Donald Logue was the star of the show. Kevin Michael Richardson was also on it. And Sofia Vergara, before Modern Family, was also on that show, too. It was a cool time. I highly recommend checking that out if you can. I've never been able to find it since it finished airing. But the theme song is available on YouTube, and the theme song kicks ass.
Eugene Gherkin was a janitor, cleaning toilets for the mayor. Till he decided that he had enough. It was time to make a stand.
Cat had to do something.
So he put a crew together, and he made a master plan.
Do they take yourself?
Now they're the Knights of Prosperity, doing crimes the best they can.
They are the Knights of Prosperity, coming from the rich to give to themselves.
Knights of Prosperity,
they even made up t-shirts.
Knights of Prosperity.
One more time in case you didn't
hear. There you go.
This is actually also his second Marvel film because he was also in Blade. And Peter Fonda appears in this movie as the Devil, which is a pretty clear nod to Easy Rider in that casting choice. Plus, he was in Deadfall, which makes a Cage reunion right there. Remember that, Mike? Peter Fonda, man, he was in Deadfall.
That feels like a whole other lifetime ago.
Right? I mean, that's got to have been like 2 years ago that we reviewed that movie, right? Almost. Anyway, yeah. Brett Cullen, currently of Netflix's Narcos, plays Cage's father, Barton Blaze. And David Roberts, who played Roland in the Matrix sequels, plays Captain Jack Dolan, the police captain. And finally, this marks a really early appearance from Rebel Wilson, known for her breakout role in the Pitch Perfect movies, plus stuff like Bridesmaids and How to Be Single, as Girl in Alley, a character Ghost Rider saves from being mugged. And you texted me as soon as she showed up when you were watching it, like, is that fucking the girl from Pitch Perfect? Like,
I felt really bad for not being able to remember her name, but yeah, I was like, wait a second.
Yes.
Amazing.
And that is always one of my favorite things to do on this podcast. It's like notes, like early appearances of actors we're big fans of. I wouldn't say I'm a big fan of Rebel Wilson, but like, I like her. She's not like,
you know, a notable actor.
Yeah, definitely a notable person. I wouldn't do, you know, a Complete Works podcast about her yet, but like, but I enjoy seeing her in things. She's great in Pain and Gain as well, the Michael Bay movie. And the film was written and directed by Mark Steven Johnson, although apparently Cage was so passionate about this project, Mike, that he did some uncredited rewrites of the script himself.
Oh, man, that explains a lot.
Yeah, I guess it does. And Johnson had previously directed 2003's Daredevil and would next direct 2010's When in Rome, a romantic comedy starring Kristen Bell and Josh Duhamel. Ghost Rider was released in 2007 to a pretty negative reception, currently holds a 26% of Rotten Tomatoes, and that year Cage was nominated for a Razzie Award for Worst Actor for his work on this film, Next, and National Treasure 2. And he lost that award to Eddie Murphy for Norbit as well.
He was nominated three times and lost.
Well, what they do, I think what they do with the Razzies is like they decide who they want to nominate for Worst Actor, and then they just put every movie they were in.
Got it.
Cage was in three movies in 2007, so they threw all three movies in, kind of thing.
Right.
And this was the second time Cage would be nominated for a Razzie. It would not be the last. He's a five-time Razzie Award nominee, in fact. So the first time was for The Wicker Man. And now 2007, he was nominated for three films. If you went to the theater that weekend Ghost Rider came out, you may have also seen the Tyler Perry film Daddy's Little Girls. You may have seen Music and Lyrics with Hugh Grant and Drew Barrymore. The political thriller Breach with Chris Cooper as an FBI agent convicted of spying for the Soviet Union. Timely. Or you could have seen Bridge to Terabithia, the Disney adaptation of the popular book which starred Josh Hutcherson and Anna Sophia Robb.
Wow.
Yeah.
A little slice of history.
Exactly. You know, just a little context for you in terms of what Ghost Rider was doing. I remember Ghost Rider coming out the same weekend as Bridge to Terabithia, actually. That was like a thing in my memory. Because I'm pretty sure I went with my friend that opening weekend, and I think his sister went with us in the car because we had to be dropped off because we weren't old enough to drive. I think she went to go see Bridge to Terabithia while we saw Ghost Rider, and then we all had to meet up afterwards. So, yeah, there's some context for you there. I also distinctly remember that Ghost Rider was the first time I saw the trailer for Cloverfield. That was the big
wow.
that, because that was, you know, I saw like the Statue of Liberty thing, like you see the head falling off, and there was no title for the movie at that point. They didn't tell you what the title of the movie was, so it was like this whole thing, like we were talking about it, like what the fuck was that movie? Like, yeah, you know, it got people talking, man. Cloverfield was big. And Ghost Rider did do pretty decent business at the box office. On a budget of $110 million, it made $228 million. And of course, Ghost Rider would go on to spawn a sequel, 2012's Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance. But that's a story for another podcast.
Wow. That was amazing.
We will do that at one, though. I think that one's kind of interesting, too, because that one is also on the periphery of like a watershed moment in superhero movies. Because 3 years later, or 3 months later, the Avengers would come out.
Holy shit.
You know? And so these Ghost Rider movies like exist like just on the cuff of like superhero movie history. It's kind of nuts. And the IMDb plot synopsis for Ghost Rider reads, stunt motorcyclist Johnny Blaze gives up his soul to become a hell-blazing vigilante to fight against power-hungry Blackheart, the son of the devil himself.
Ooh.
Yeah. So, Mike, I guess we got to start, as always, by asking, what are your overall thoughts on Ghost Rider?
My overall thoughts on Ghost Rider are that it is a interesting archaeological artifact, I think, like we were just kind of talking about, you know, how it exists on the periphery of the superhero boom, basically.
Exactly.
It just missed it. But it is also just like a dumb, goofy movie. Like it's something I would expect. It kind of walks the line. Well, not even. It doesn't even. It seems like it's attempting to be like this kind of goofy midnight movie kind of thing. You know, it's dealing with demons and monsters and kind of all this stuff. And it's hamming it up. And like you mentioned, definitely leaning heavily into the Sam Raimi influence.
Yeah.
For a lot of these camera movements and stuff like that. But it also at the same time has to be this really wide appealing blockbuster smash hit, so it can't do all the campy silly stuff that you would want in one of those kind of movies that you would see in a, you know, it made me think of something I would see at like, you know, one of these five movie marathons that we go to, you know, Hudson Horror Show or Smear the Alamo or something like that.
Yeah,
if it was able to lean fully into that genre, if it was able to go into like it reminded me a lot of People Under the Stairs in its tone.
Okay.
But wasn't able to get there in any meaningful way. It seemed like it was trying, like, I don't know. It seemed like it was making a wink at that kind of movie, but couldn't do it. And it also is kind of the whole aesthetic of the movie is the 15-year-old boy that thinks Slayer and the WWE are the pinnacle of entertainment, and that's what everything should be. that's what the whole aesthetic of this movie is. Which is hilarious to me for you to say you were 14 and you saw like you went and had a blast that opening weekend with your friend. It's like, oh, it's Mike. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, though I think I pretty much agree with everything you said. I think Ghost Rider is a really interesting case because it exists right on the periphery of where superhero movies were getting really good. Like a year later, we got Iron Man and The Dark Knight. That year also saw Hellboy 2 and The Incredible Hulk. And The Incredible Hulk is not a particularly good movie, but it does like represent the beginning of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So I'll throw it in there. But 2007, on the other hand, Ghost Rider, Spider-Man 3, and Fantastic Four, Rise of the Silver Surfer were the movies that were released that year. And Rise of the Silver Surfer is the movie I tend to point to as the moment I realize movies could be bad. That is not a good film. That is not a good movie, Fantastic Four, Rise of the Silver Surfer. I do think Ghost Rider starts off on the wrong foot. You know, it spends its first 20 minutes on this origin story with young Johnny Blaze and his father. Right. And that shit is, for the most part, pretty lame. And we don't even see, like, actual Ghost Rider until almost an hour into this movie. And that was kind of a problem with a lot of the origin story superhero movies in the mid-2000s. Like, you know, it would take so long to get to where, like, the good stuff is, like, where you want it to be.
Right.
And a lot of times, like, the sequel would be better if the movie was able to get a sequel. But, you know, a lot of times it just wasn't the case. And, like, you know, even, like Sam Raimi's Spider-Man movie, like, I love his Spider-Man movie. And part of that is because the Spider-Man stuff happens pretty early on in that movie. Like, you get pretty much all you need to know within the first half hour, and then you're just in the Spider-Man world, and it's still the origin throughout, but you're getting, you know, your Spider-Man action going on. Ghost Rider doesn't show up until almost halfway through this film. But when Ghost Rider finally does show up, gotta tell you, man, I still had a blast.
Yeah. That whole, it's still a lot of fun, I think, when Cage is Ghost Rider.
Yeah, it taps into the kind of chaos that I think superhero movies don't really go for that often. And I agree with you that it feels restrained by the limitations of a PG-13 four quadrant studio blockbuster.
Yeah.
And there's definitely stuff that is just flat out bad in this movie. I also can't deny just like how much fun I had watching a lot of it and how it does tap into that 13, 14 year old mindset of just wanting to watch something insane and badass. And
just make it on fire and it's cool.
Exactly. Yeah, like this movie is goofy, but I feel like it knows it's goofy. Like it feels like it's playing into the goofiness and it has fun with that. So I think your comparison to the five movie marathons that we go to, it makes sense. And a lot of those movies are like insane and goofy and stuff, but like, and this one doesn't really reach those heights because it isn't able to get to those heights because it seems limited by that amount. Ghost Rider 2, which we'll talk about in 10 years when we get to that episode, yeah. I haven't seen that since it was in theaters, and I liked Ghost Rider 2, I think, more than the original when it came out, because it does go a little more ballistic with what Ghost Rider is able to do. That movie had like half the budget of this one, and it was, you know, directed by the guys who made Crank, and they had a little more freedom with what they were able to do with Ghost Rider. Like, there's a scene in that movie where you see Ghost Rider like peeing, and the pee is fire. And
wow, I don't remember that at all.
Yeah, did you see Ghost Rider 2?
I feel like I must have, but I can't remember anything about it.
It's a wild time, man. Idris Elba's in that one.
Oh, God.
Yeah. but yeah, we're not talking about Ghost Rider 2 today, though. We're really focusing on Ghost Rider 1. And, you know, I think it's pretty conventional in terms of what it's doing superhero origin story-wise. But I think, the fact that it is dealing with, like, these otherworldly demons and it's kind of dealing with horror elements, even though it's not really able to go full horror, it does kind of give it its own kind of flavor compared to other kind of stale superhero, like, the other mediocre superhero movies of that age, I guess.
Yeah, it definitely stands apart from something like Fantastic Four, which, like, they're the most, other than Superman and, like, Batman, they're, like, the most archetypal superheroes to me in my, like, just in my mind.
Sure.
So to have, you know, to have that and Ghost Rider be kind of coming out within the same span of years, in the same year they have the sequels come out or whatever it was.
Yeah.
It's interesting, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. So what did you think of Nicolas Cage as Johnny Blaze and Ghost Rider in this movie, Mike?
Oh, Nicolas Cage. this is another one, hot on the heels of Wicker Man, where he's kind of doing he's becoming the meme of Nicolas Cage. He's there. Well, I mean, he's getting there, I think. Like we said, once Wicker Man came out, that was it. But but he's, you know, there's so many scenes, particularly when he's first becoming Ghost Rider. And, you know, his face is melting off and he's just screaming. And then there was the behind the scenes footage that eternally damned him. I can't remember if it was Ghost Rider or Ghost Rider 2. There's a particular clip, a transformation scene without the special effects got released.
I think I remember that. And I think that was Ghost Rider 2.
It might have been. That does sound familiar, actually.
Yeah.
But it's just that same kind of that. Same notion, basically, where it's just him screaming as the camera spins in a circle around him, and it's just ridiculous Cage freakout stuff. But that's still a lot of fun when it happens.
Yeah, I think that first transformation sequence is a masterwork of screaming Nicolas Cage. And it goes on
for so long.
It goes on for a long time, and it's just constant Nicolas Cage screaming. Fan of Nicolas Cage screaming, which you know I am, You get a lot of that in this movie, in those transformation sequences. And, you know, part of what I was surprised about when I was watching it is that, you know, I think Cage is pretty solid in this movie. And I was a little surprised at how much he was kind of underplaying it when he was Johnny Blaze. You know, when he was just the human part of him as Johnny Blaze, you know, he's kind of like the socially awkward, like mild-mannered dude. And I was kind of surprised. Like, I figured, you know, Cage is going to be going nuts the entire time. But then I think that's what makes his transformation to Ghost Rider so effective, you know, as he turns from this mild-mannered, socially awkward dude into this literal screaming on fire hell demon, you know?
Yeah.
And then you have, you know, Ghost Cage as this like CGI Ghost Rider creature. And so you're not getting the full effect of Cage. I wish there was some way where you can have like a more effectively like motion captured Cage as Ghost Rider, where you can kind of morph the skull to look like Cage's face or something. I think that would have been amazing if like Weta could get on that, have like Andy Serkis give Cage some tips or something. Like a potential Ghost Rider 3 with a motion captured Cage face would be like unreal. But, you know, I think as Ghost Rider, you're getting Cage, and it is still his voice heavily modulated. But it does kind of lose a little bit of the impact because it's not actually – like, you're not actually watching Cage's face. You're watching a CGI skeleton head, and that's amazing. but at the same time, it's just not Cage. Like, it is, but it's not. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I definitely agree. The moments when he is Ghost Rider, I mean, it's definitely, I guess, a limitation of the technology at the time, even though it does look okay. It doesn't look as bad as other CG looked.
I think it looks fine.
Yeah, but definitely, like, the shoulders are just straight square. Like, it's just a square shoulder. Like, it just looks weird. And that, you know, that's just by nature of the fact that it's a flaming skeleton.
And they make jokes about that throughout the movie, that he's, you know, a flaming skeleton. Like, people are like perplexed by it, but also like they kind of like take it in stride almost.
There's a moment when he is kind of like breaking out of jail or whatever, when like shit's popping off towards the end of the movie, where a cop walks up to him or runs up to him and smacks him with his nightstick and breaks his jaw off, and Ghost Rider just kind of like clicks it back on. And that's the moment that the cop reacts, is when he winces when the jaw goes back.
It's not the sight of the, you know, on fire skeleton in a biker jacket in front of you. It's
that he puts his jaw back on. That's the moment. Yeah. So there's a lot of that kind of thing happening in this movie.
Yeah, but I do think, getting back to Cage as Johnny Blaze, I think he actually fills out the role pretty well. He offers like a lot of like very oddball and quirky touches to the character that we get to know before the Ghost Rider stuff kicks in. So like, you know, throughout the movie, you see like he's a big fan of the Carpenters. He's really fascinated by monkeys. He eats jelly beans out of a martini glass. Like, he has these like oddball quirks that are kind of like layered throughout, you know, Johnny Blaze. And I don't think it makes Johnny Blaze like a fully fledged character, but I think it does give him some, like, you know, some detail to his life. Like, you get a sense of who he is as a person. He's just kind of like an odd, like, little weirdo.
Yeah, he sort of reminded me of Cage's character from Matchstick Men, where we get a lot of these kind of, you know, with the weird neuroses stuff going on
when he's in between. Also.
Oh yeah, 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 definitely, yeah. When he's in between being a hell demon, he's kind of just like this normal weird dude.
Yeah, exactly. Now, Mike, how do you think this role fits into the roles we've seen Cage play so far? We just name checked Matchstick Men and The Rock, but is there anything else that you wanted to bring up?
Nothing really stood out to me in particular as a comparison to make, other than what we just talked about for Matchstick Men and The Rock.
Right.
But as I said, it's the kind of the beginning, the next step in the journey to becoming Nicolas Cage, the direct to DVD kind of just action movie guy that just needs to be in stuff. Not that I feel like Ghost Rider goes to the depths of those movies. I suspect will when we get there.
Right.
But it's just another stumble in the previously rising career of Nicolas Cage. I think he's about to plateau.
I suppose. I mean, this was a pretty big hit. It was a solid hit for him.
It made lots of dollars.
Yeah. Critically, it didn't do so well. But it did. I mean, it did well enough to warrant a sequel 5 years later.
That's true.
You know, and I don't think the sequel made a ton of money, but I think it did okay. But then the studio ended up letting the rights to Ghost Rider revert back to Marvel. Marvel now has the rights to Ghost Rider. They're using him on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. now.
That's right.
Which I got to say, I mean, I've seen some praise go towards the Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. version of Ghost Rider. I hate their version of Ghost Rider.
Wow.
I think it is completely inferior to the Nicolas Cage version, and I will stand by that till the day I die. But yeah. I do think this is kind of notable because this is Cage's first attempt at a superhero. You know, it's, you know, in the changing blockbuster landscape, like, you know, big actors were trying to get into superhero games. And, you know, in the next year or so, like Marvel Cinematic Universe kick off, The Dark Knight would come out. You know, Nolan kind of legitimized superhero movies critically. I mean, Sam Raimi did too, but Nolan's like, Nolan's Batman trilogy is kind of looked at as like, you know, the Godfather trilogy of superhero movies in a way. And I think the Marvel Cinematic Universe has done the same thing, where they're just so massively successful and so popular and so critically well received that they're just attracting like top level talent for like supporting roles, essentially. And so in that respect, I think Cage is like a little bit ahead of the game in terms of trying to wanting to get in on a superhero movie. You know, and he, obviously he was a huge superhero fan for a long time. He was cast as Superman in Superman Lives, and that never came to be. So he's wanted to do something like this for a long time. And I can't think of a better superhero fit for Nicolas Cage than Ghost Rider, honestly. Like this, like what is Nicolas Cage if not an on fire skeleton riding a motorcycle? Like what?
Yeah, just being the devil's bounty hunter. You're
exactly.
Right.
Exactly. Like that is the like when you describe all the Marvel superheroes to me and asking me which one Nicolas Cage should play, this is the one I would probably pick. You know?
That's a good point. Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely a weird. I don't know how much Ghost Rider fits into the kind of overall Marvel universe. Just like speaking of comics and stuff, like I don't know if he's part of any of these teams. Like I don't think he's an Avenger ever, but it would be awesome to see him show up in some Marvel movie at some point. Yeah, even though they don't cross the streams with the TV anymore, you know, stuff like that. Right. But that would just be fun.
Yeah, absolutely. But I also think this movie kind of fits into the patterns of blockbusters that Nicolas Cage had starred in throughout his career, and had the kind of like they moved, you know, they transitioned from like big R-rated action movies, right? So there was like The Rock and Con Air and Face Off and all those like R-rated movies, and then you know you start to move like transition to like PG-13 type affairs. So it was like Gone in 60 Seconds and National Treasure and now Ghost Rider. So it's sort of Cage's like softening a little bit. Like you know he was you know in the mid 90s he was like this pretty big, like hardcore action star. Like he was in three of the biggest action movies of the 90s. And you know, now he's like kind of transitioning into more mainstream kind of four quadrant fare.
He's making Disney adventure movies with National Treasure.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
and you know, he's making his attempt at a big superhero movie and, you know, it, did a decent business. But, anyway, were there any moments or scenes in Ghost Rider that stood out to you, Mike, about this movie? Anything you want to address?
Well, so there's a few things. one of the things I wanted to shout out, as always, is Cage's choice of accent. I think he's doing a wonderful attempt at a Sam Elliott impression for most of the movie.
Right, which is pretty funny considering Sam Elliott is in the movie.
Yeah, I didn't really notice it. I thought it was just like, you know, him doing a Texas accent, which is kind of like what he was doing in a little bit the better version of what his accent was in Con Air. But then he talks to Sam Elliott, and I was like, oh, shit, I see what you're doing, Nicolas Cage. But I also, it's hard to criticize a movie like Ghost Rider for a lack of logic. but every time he kills one of the elemental demon guys, it seems like just kind of because.
Yeah, no, I am with you there. So, yeah, there's like the wind demon, right? And he like creates this like wind vortex with his chain lasso, and suddenly he just dies, right? Like that's
he laughs at him for trying to whip him, and then he just fades away, and like it doesn't make any sense,
right? And then there's like a water demon, right? That he what does he do to the water demon? He like evaporates them or something.
He just kind of like boils them, I guess. I don't know. He turns into a bunch of bubbles.
Yeah, it is incredibly silly. But I want to give a shout out to Wes Bentley in this movie, Mike, because he is just on another level of ham. In this movie.
Yeah.
When the movie first started, I thought something got mixed up in casting and he accidentally took Nicolas Cage's role. Like, just the way he's acting, the way his voice is, it's pretty nuts. He is essentially playing the personification of those screamer videos that people used to share on YouTube.
Oh my God. That's the best description of his character.
And it happens a lot. Like, it happens a lot in the movie where, like, somebody will suddenly turn and Wes Bentley will be there. Just, like, really, like, up close to the camera, like, with his eyes bugging out and his, like, mouth wide open with, like, fangs showing. It is great. It's awesome when Cage shows up at his own apartment and he sees like Ava Mendez lying on the ground, and he like runs over towards her and she like points and Wes Bentley's just standing on the other side of the room going like, "Yeah."
It's great. Yeah, it's pretty great.
It's phenomenal. But then there's my absolute favorite line, probably my favorite line in the entire movie, is at the very end after Wes Bentley has eaten a bunch of souls, and he starts to like take on the personification of all those souls or whatever, and he just like breathes out and he just goes,
"My name is Legion, for we are many."
Name is Legion, for we are many.
I would have loved to have been on the soundstage for that. Just without all the like voice effect stuff they do to that line.
Just to see what he was doing. It is pretty fantastic. So I want to give a shout out to Wes Bentley because he is going for it in this movie. Also, Ava Mendez, I want to talk about her a little bit because she exists in this movie exclusively to show up in scenes that producers felt didn't have enough cleavage in them, I think is kind of the idea.
Yeah.
It's actually kind of absurd how often her shirt or dress is popped open.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure she doesn't have a shirt with more than 3 buttons the whole movie.
And like her performance is not great, I think. But I think that she and Cage have like an okay, sometimes pretty funny chemistry throughout the movie. Even though I think Roxanne's devotion to Blaze is like completely ridiculous.
Yeah,
like in a movie where you know Nicolas Cage turns into an on fire hell demon, I feel like that's the most unbelievable thing is that Roxanne is still. Still pining after Nicolas Cage.
Is that she sticks around?
Yeah, there's like one part of the movie where you know she. After he has like he set up a date with her and he didn't show and she shows up at his apartment the next day and she's already told him like I don't want to see you again and then like a few hours later she shows up at his apartment and it's just to make out with him like that's
yeah it's really weird.
It's very weird. But yeah, there's but I do think they have like a solid chemistry together. There's the awkward interview scene which I think is pretty funny where she gets an interview with Johnny Blaze and he's just like, you know, being awkward and like, "Oh, I heard you got married," and it's like live on the air and just like, "No, that didn't happen." Like,
"Johnny Blaze, thank you for talking to us before your big jump. No one has ever attempted such a distance before. 300 feet from field goal to field goal. What's going through your mind right now?"
"You look really good. I've seen you on TV. You know, I watch a lot of TV and you do a really good job."
"Johnny, what drives somebody to risk their life for entertainment?"
"I heard you got married."
"Didn't happen."
"No."
"Most of the time, the press focuses on the crashes, the broken bones, the cost of what you do. Are there any other costs?"
"Yeah."
"Okay, well. Thank you for this revealing peek into the life of Johnny Blaze."
There's actually some that reminded me. There's a shot, a particular shot towards the end of the movie, like when, after the whole Legion thing, when Cage gets the shotgun or whatever, and he like reaches into the shadow and it like turns into like the demon shotgun or whatever. And like, that's kind of a cool concept, I guess. But then he blows up Wes Bentley's character and he like turns into like this kind of like ichor. And there's like a kind of, there's a scene where like all the souls like crawl back together into the shape of him, and like I thought that was kind of neat. I don't know. I just wanted to bring it up. That was the kind of stuff that reminds me of the like kind of midnight movie horror movie kind of stuff. Like,
right.
You know, very clearly. But I thought that was neat. I don't know. There's a lot of that kind of stuff in this movie.
That's very similar to actually the shotgun thing where he puts it in the darkness and it becomes like the Ghost Rider shotgun. It's very similar to like Pirates of the Caribbean, like the original Pirates, like the climax of that movie, like Johnny Depp like goes into the moonlight or whatever and turns into the skeleton or whatever. Like it feels very similar to that. But yeah, also just on the Ava Mendez thing one more time, there's one really weird joke that I think is very strange, and it's when Nick Cage is standing her up on the date. And she's like, you know, at the restaurant, just like drinking wine all night. And like the waiter, she is like leaving and she like grabs him. He's like, "Wait, do you think I'm pretty?" And the waiter kind of like does this like, eh, like,
yes.
Yeah. face. And I feel like that's such a weird joke implying she isn't pretty, because she's like, Eva Mendes is like objectively one of the hottest people alive.
To the point
where she's in the movie The Other Guys, and every joke involving her character in The Other Guys is about how hot she is. And
yeah. And so super
it's,
weird.
And so it's weird that Ghost Rider would like make that joke, especially when they're using her as eye candy in every other scene of the movie.
Yeah.
It's just very strange. I will say this movie does have the good sense to have Sam Elliott narrate the beginning and ending.
True. They got that right.
I think his voice does add a lot of gravitas, even if it just makes me want to make Big Lebowski jokes, you know?
So he did what no writer has ever done before. He outran the devil himself. The thing about legends is, sometimes they're true.
You know, sometimes legends are born and sometimes legends are true. I'm talking about the dude here. This is how I felt like that sentence was going to end. But
Yeah. I did actually really like, I thought it was just like a cool pump up moment when you know, Johnny Blaze and fucking Sam Slade or whatever. What was his name? I don't
Carter
care.
Slade.
Carter Slade, when the two Ghost Riders are like roaring across the desert together. Yes. That was kind of dope.
Yeah, the reveal that Sam Elliott is the like an older Ghost Rider was awesome. Like, just the image of him turning into one is awesome. He's riding a flaming skeleton horse, and it's crazy. And he's, you know, riding with Nicolas Cage. That's amazing. Which is why it's so disappointing that he just leaves, right?
Yeah. Holy shit, I didn't even put that together.
Yeah, they show up at the town, and Sam Elliott's like, well, I got to go on my own trail now.
Yeah,
I only had one more transformation in me, and I just used it for that. So goodbye forever.
Yeah,
it's very much. There's an episode of The Simpsons where you know, Homer is Poochie on that. He's the voice of Poochie on the Itchy and Scratchy show, and the character doesn't go well. And so at the end of the episode, the animators like redub his voice, and it's just, I have to go now. My planet needs me, and like Poochie like rises up. into the sky, and that was what Sam Elliott just did. It was like, I have to go now, my planet needs me out.
Pretty much.
So that was upsetting, but the image of him just as the original Ghost Rider was pretty fucking awesome. That was really cool. I will say, there, you know, we talked about this when we reviewed National Treasure. There will be like one moment from a movie that I haven't seen in a long time that always like that just stuck with me and that I always remembered. And in Ghost Rider, it's the look into my eyes scene. That's the scene that I remember.
Really?
The scene where, you know, he stops the mugging, the Rebel Wilson's getting mugged, and he grabs the guy by the cuffs, and he's like, look into my eyes. And he, like, makes the guy seize all the souls of the people that he's hurt over the course of his lifetime.
Look into my eyes. Your soul is stained by the blood of the innocent. Feel their pain.
That's, I don't know. For some reason, that one always just stuck out to me. But I had completely forgotten about the awesome follow-up line to Look Into My Eyes, which is, your soul is stained by the blood of the innocent. Feel their pain.
That's the best line. How could you forget about that one?
I know. I can't believe it. But yeah. So that was pretty great. I wanted to highlight that scene.
I did appreciate the scene right after that when he, you know, wakes up with the caretaker with Sam Elliott. And Sam Elliott is kind of like – and he names that and he's like, ah, the penitent stare. It's like who names your own attack? Like, that's so weird.
Yeah, what are you, a character in Dragon Ball Z or something?
Yeah, like this is really funny.
Yeah, but I also wanted to bring up the scene. Nicolas Cage is Johnny Blaze doing his big stunt, and he's about to jump a football field of helicopters. Mm-hmm. And I think my favorite thing about this, like, the movie flashes back to 30 minutes ago. To show us
my favorite film technique.
Yeah, to show us his dad saying it because we're too stupid to remember that. You know, like, his dad says that pretty early on in the movie, and then his dad dies, and then, you know, later on in the movie, Cage does it, and it's, you know, yeah, you didn't have to show us his dad saying it. We saw it the first time. Like, we we haven't left our seats. Like, it's still happening. We're watching the same movie that we were a half hour ago. If it was like, if this was Ghost Rider 3 or something, and like,
yeah,
that would be fine. That would be fine. But anyway, yeah, that flashback was very silly. I thought the actual scene was pretty fun. I enjoyed watching Nicolas Cage jump a bunch of helicopters, but you know, the flashback was unnecessary to say the least.
Yeah.
But I will say, I think the highlight of this movie, hands down, is the sequence in which Cage turns into Ghost Rider in a prison and then leads the police on an epic chase across the city. That, to me, is like the epitome of what I wanted this movie to be for its entirety. And, you know, I didn't really get that for its full runtime, but I got that for that. You know, it's probably like a 15-minute sequence, something like that. And it's a blast. I think that's like what I want from a Ghost Rider movie. He rides up a building at one point. He lassos a helicopter with a chain. There's that slow-mo shot of him jumping off the building on his bike. It's fucking rad, man.
Yeah, I agree. That stuff was just like silly fun times, and I was in. That's also where he does the like fire tornado thing and kills the air guy.
Yes.
But so like that was neat, I guess. But yeah, I think that the him riding up the building is the kind of like iconic. Or that's the thing, the shot that stuck out to me, like what we were talking about before, where the penitent stare thing stuck out to you, that you remember.
Yeah, I was a big fan of every single time the movie does the thunderclap, show a quick flash of a skull or something, because
yeah.
It happens a lot in this movie, and it's hilarious every time. But the best time is the first time it happens, when Peter Fonda shows up in the beginning. It's the first 20 – it's, you know, when he first shows up and Cage is working on his bike – or not Cage. It's the young Nicolas Cage, and he's working on his bike. Peter Fonda's like wandering around the tent, and lightning flashes, and his shadow is this hunchbacked devil.
Yeah. It reminded me of Drag Me to Hell, I think. Yeah, that where the like the shadow demon chases somebody across the wall that was hilarious. Yeah,
and I think the best part about that is that, you know, young Johnny Blaze is looking right at the shadow, like when that happens. He's looking
I
right
didn't even
at
notice
it.
That.
He's looking right at it, and he doesn't even react. Yeah, it's just like there's no moment where he's like, "Huh, that's weird."
Interesting.
Yeah, I laughed so goddamn hard at that scene, and every time. Like, Cage has, like, this dramatic stare out a window at one point, and he's like, you got an angel looking after you, dude. Yeah. Or something else. And the lightning flashes, and you see a skeleton on his face, like, ooh. But, yeah. Otherwise, is there any other scenes stood out to you, Mike, or should we move on to Netflix reviews?
No, I think we should get to Netflix reviews. We have more to cover this episode, Mike.
We do, yeah. And we'll talk about that in a few minutes. But all right. Let's do Netflix reviews for Ghost Rider starting right now. So first off, we got a 2-star review of Ghost Rider. It goes like this. This was one of those rare instances that my husband and I disagreed on a movie. I hated it. I didn't even mind watching other movies like this one, such as Punisher, Sin City, or even Spider-Man. But this one offended my intelligence. Corny lines and actions made good actors appear horrible. I was never pulled into the story because at no time was it ever believable. I like Nicolas Cage and Sam Elliott, but I cringe for them at having to play such cheesy parts. In the end, my husband said, that was fun, and I am looking at him in a whole new light.
Ghost Rider broke up that marriage.
I think it did.
I'm sorry to report. But I forgot about The Punisher, Thomas Jane's The Punisher. That's another one of these movies that exists in limbo here.
Yeah, that was 2004. And then Punisher Warzone was actually 2008. That was the same year as Iron Man and The Dark Knight. That was Ray Stevenson as The Punisher in that movie. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's another Punisher is another hero that never really got his big breakout movie hit, I guess. But, you know, he's got an upcoming Netflix TV show, so there's that as well. But, anyway, here's a 1-star review of Ghost Rider. Ava Mendez is hot. That is the only redeeming quality of this movie.
bold statement.
Here's another 1-star review of Ghost Rider. One of my 5 worst movies. Every scene, astonishingly bad. Did anyone think Nick Cage was ever in danger, pain, any emotion at all? Nope. His girl, that he dumps repeatedly, never feels any emotion. Bad Bart and his minions, we not as scary as the jailbirds. Not sure if Netflix cut out the jail fight scene, and what happened when Nick missed his dinner reunion date with his girl? Disc looked like it skipped, but you can't tell the difference between a movie and a damaged disc. You know you're in trouble.
Wow. That's a good point.
I guess so. So I feel bad that this guy potentially missed some of the key scenes in Ghost Rider, but it didn't seem like
tragic.
He was enjoying it anyway. Here's a 4-star review of Ghost Rider. This really wasn't a bad story, but some stuff I just couldn't get past, like the hair. I love Nicolas Cage, and he probably really, really wanted this part, but did not make a good Johnny Blaze. Whoever cut his hair like that should have been shot, or at least fired. That was the most disgusting haircut I have seen on a quote-unquote hero. Worse is that it was nothing like the comic book character, but once turned into the Ghost Rider, NC was perfect. So I guess as long as I didn't have to look at that hair, it was all good.
All right.
And, you know, Nick Cage's hair in this movie is not great. You know, it's
no. I guess it's, I didn't notice, but yeah, it's pretty bad.
It looks weird. It's dyed black, and it has like it's like kind of pushed down on his forehead. It doesn't look great. So yeah, he's right on that front. Here's a 5-star review of Ghost Rider. Okay, let's think what this movie is about. This movie is about a flaming black leather-clad skeleton riding a flaming black chopper, doing battle with the son of the devil, who is what else trying to take over the world. Reviews are complaining because it's hokey and formulaic. How could it possibly be anything else? It's Ghost Rider, not The Tempest. It's hysterical fun. Special effects are just one great image after another. Ava Mendez and her bosoms, three separate characters, are awesome as the love interest. And the entire supporting cast is perfect for their parts. Fonda as the devil is a riot, and Sam Elliott in particular is just a delight as an iconic version of himself. When Elliott starts telling Cage the full story of the contract, we actually get a Western guitar behind him. How could you not love that? You complain because this story is not serious? Of course it's not serious. It's a loving tribute to a great and uniquely American mythos. In the spirit of Aykroyd and Hanks's Dragnet. I think it's brilliant. Big fan of Ghost Rider right here. And,
yeah.
I got to say, it's sort of infectious, I feel like.
Yeah. I think I've come around a bit on this movie.
Here's a 4-star review of Ghost Rider. This movie is good, but I'm not a really big fan. I like the second movie a little better than the first. The death of Blackheart and his minions is pretty creepy. My favorite part is when Ghost Rider, also Johnny Blaze, picks up Blackheart and pins him against the wall. Ghost Rider says, "Look into my eyes." Blackheart fakes a scream in pain, but then he starts laughing. Then Blackheart says, "Your stare doesn't work on me. I have no soul to burn. By the way, I'm Harrison."
Thanks, Harrison.
Thanks, Harrison, for that.
Thanks for calling in.
For that insightful description of a scene.
Yeah.
And finally, I got one more. Here's a 2-star review of Ghost Rider. I wanted to like this movie more than I did, but every time I was beginning to get into it, Ava Mendez showed up and totally ruined it. Her character is annoying, intrusive, obnoxious, and totally useless. Because of her, I lowered my rating from 3 to 2 and almost went to a 1. Ghost Rider is supposed to be a guy's story.
Oh, no.
Mendez castrates every guy she comes in contact with in this thing. Keep that in mind, guys.
Oh, no, Mike. Why'd you pick this one?
I thought it was stupid. I thought it was a stupid one.
I mean, it is pretty dumb.
Yeah, so there's that. So there's some asshole. And that about wraps up our review of Ghost Rider, Mike. And you thought we were done? What? Man, get the fuck out of here. We got a little extra discussion for you, because in 2007, Nicolas Cage made an appearance in one of the fake movie trailers created specifically for Quentin Tarantino and Robert Rodriguez's Grindhouse. It was directed by Rob Zombie, and it was called Werewolf Women of the SS.
This film is a brilliant achievement in motion picture history. Finally, the truth about Hitler's diabolical plans to create a race of superwomen can be told. Werewolf Women of the SS. Welcome to Death Camp 13, home of the Nazis' diabolical plans to create an army of super werewolf soldiers.
This project, its failure, will be your demise and the end of Germany, Bormann.
You have been chosen.
Rejoice!
I have found the perfect solution.
The she-devils of Belzac.
Can they alone supply the blood needed to save Hitler's mad dream? Or will the pride of Germany fall into ruin?
This is my project.
We are now in total control of Pure Wolf.
This is an outrage! Silence!
Featuring Udo Kier, Sherry Moon Zombie, Tom Tolles, Sybil Danning, Bill Moseley, and Nicolas Cage as Fu Manchu.
This is my vision!
Werewolf Women of the SS. written and directed by Rob Zombie.
Now, in case you don't know much about this project, let's backtrack a bit. Grindhouse was Tarantino and Rodriguez paying tribute to the exploitation films that they grew up loving. It was a cinematic experiment and one of the more unique experiences ever put out by a major studio. Grindhouse was two movies for the price of one. The first was Robert Rodriguez's zombie movie Planet Terror, and the second was Quentin Tarantino's car chase movie Death Proof. And the duo had also commissioned some of their favorite directors and friends to make trailers for fake movies that would play before each film in the feature. So Robert Rodriguez himself directed Machete, which would become the basis of the full-length Machete and its sequel, Machete Kills. Director Jason Eisner won a contest and got Hobo with a Shotgun attached to some prints, which would also become a movie itself with Rutger Hauer. Eli Roth created a trailer for a slasher movie called Thanksgiving, and Edgar Wright directed a hilarious one in the style of Hammer Horror Pictures called Don't. All of these are worth checking out. Definitely check those out on YouTube if you haven't yet. What are you about to say, Mike?
Add it to your list. Thanksgiving is also being made into a feature-length movie.
Is it really?
Yeah. Also directed by Eli Roth, because that's the thing we needed, I guess.
Yeah, I hadn't heard about that. That's interesting.
I'm pretty sure I saw that while I was maybe I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure it popped up while I was searching for this movie to find the trailer for it.
That's
stuff.
Interesting. I'd be surprised if they're still mining Grindhouse for movie ideas. But
I mean, maybe Eli Roth is on some tough times. I don't know.
I don't know. He's doing that Death Wish movie, so maybe you're right. And finally, director and musician Rob Zombie, at this point known for films like House of a Thousand Corpses and The Devil's Rejects, directed his own fake trailer called Werewolf Women of the SS, which was an homage to Nazi exploitation films like Ilsa She-Wolf of the SS, Fräulein Devil, and Love Camp 7. So the idea behind this trailer is that a lot of those films were several ideas kind of smashed into one movie, and so Rob Zombie was like, we've got these Nazi uniforms, but we have this Chinese set too, let's smash them together!
Just Rob Zombie things.
And that was Werewolf Women of the SS. So, Mike, I mean, what do you think of this trailer? Like, we're talking about this now because we talked about this a little bit. Like, we didn't really want, like, as much as we would love to talk about Grindhouse because we love Grindhouse, it seems kind of superfluous to do a whole episode about Grindhouse when Cage is in 10 seconds of a fake trailer that was part of Grindhouse, you know?
Yeah. Like, we could watch 5 hours of a thing, or we can watch a minute and 30 seconds.
Exactly. So it just seemed easier to tack the discussion of a fake trailer on at the end of our Ghost Rider review, since this came out, I think, in April 2007, I want to say. So it was right around the same time as Ghost Rider, like 2 months later. So what do you think of Werewolf Woman at the SS, Mike? Like this Rob Zombie fake trailer?
So that Werewolf Woman, it's such an interesting pairing to have Ghost Rider and Werewolf Women of the SS.
Yeah.
Because as we were talking about, it feels like Ghost Rider is kind of, you know, winking or nodding towards these kinds of movies. You know, maybe not these kind of Nazi exploitation films, but these kind of like, you know, silly stuff that, you know, maybe cheesy 80s midnight movie kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So it feels like, you know, two projects of the same vein. And Werewolf Women of the SS looks like a movie I would want to see. It looks like a lot of just goofy guys in rubber werewolf masks shooting machine guns into crowds of Nazis. Like, done. I'm in.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, the trailer's big reveal is Nicolas Cage. He's like the main joke at the end of this trailer.
Yeah.
You know, you have like, it's about a 2-minute trailer and you have like this completely ridiculous setup of like, you know, Nazis turning into werewolves because of the serum. There's like these naked chicks that are administering it, and it's completely ridiculous. And then he starts like introducing the cast, and it's Udo Kier, who's a significant German actor, Sybil Danning, who's a huge cult actress, and then there's, you hear a gong, and and then it says, and Nicolas Cage as Fu Manchu.
Yep.
You know, this iconic Asian role that Nicolas Cage is playing. And is it offensive that a white actor is playing this Asian role? Yes, but everything in this trailer is offensive. That is the point of this thing. It is so laughable and yet totally believable that Cage might actually take that role.
It feels like a precursor. Fast forward 10 years, and I feel like he'd be in this movie.
Exactly.
Yeah, he might be. Now, he would be in this movie now,
you're,
is what I
you're
mean.
You're not wrong. It's such a perfect touch to a pretty great homage to these kind of films. And I think it's a great send-up of Cage's own image, too. Like, that's the thing. Like, this is the point in Cage's career where it seemed like, yeah, Cage would probably just do anything. And, you know, we would see how true that was over the next 10 years. But, you know, at this point, we were starting to see that. And, yeah, it's Cage as Fu Manchu. Just like, there he is. He only has one line in the trailer, and he shouts he shouts like something like, "This was my vision."
I couldn't even understand it. Whatever he shouts,
it's almost unintelligible. Something like, "This is my vision," and then he has like a big like laugh, like a laughter, like ha 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 ha.
This is my vision.
Yeah.
And then that's it. That's all you get out of Nicolas Cage and Werewolf Woman of the SS. But it is such a funny cameo. And I will tell you, I got to see this. I got to see a 35mm print of Grindhouse earlier this year to celebrate its 10-year anniversary at the Alamo Drafthouse. And it was a blast. And I can tell you, all the trailers played like gangbusters. But the Cage reveal in Werewolf Woman of the SS, just the entire theater, just uproarious laughter. Like, everybody thought it was hilarious. And ironically, the screening was preceded with some trailers for other films released in 2007. Like, Justin, who runs the Alamo Drafthouse in Yonkers, introduced Grindhouse, and he was saying that, Grindhouse was one of his favorite things of 2007. But it, completely bombed at the box office because it totally makes sense to me why that movie bombed. Like, outside of, film nerds, I feel like most people don't want to see a nearly 4-hour tribute to a genre of movies they don't care about.
Right.
But so before they showed Grindhouse, they showed trailers for other movies from 2007 that made more money than Grindhouse did. And the first one was Transformers. And the second one was another Nicolas Cage movie, National Treasure Book of Secrets, which we'll talk about in a few weeks. And so when that one came on, like, I was with some friends and they knew I did this podcast. And they were like, "Hey, it's Cage." And I was like, "Yeah, it is. Holy shit. National Treasure 2. And then I had completely forgotten about a lot of the fake trailers. I purposely did not rewatch them. Because I knew I was going to this thing, and I wanted to experience them fresh because I hadn't seen it in a few years. So the Cage reveal in Werewolf Women was just so good.
That's just awesome.
And yeah, otherwise, any other last thoughts about Werewolf Women of the SS or Ghost Rider, Mike, that you want to throw out there before we wrap up?
No, I think I've said all I have to say.
All right, cool beans. Mike, where can we find you online this week?
You can find me at twitter.com/mdfilmblog. And if you like Dungeons & Dragons, you can find my geek friends and I's games. That's not how that goes usually, Mike. I said it differently this time, and I'm flustered.
Yo, man.
The Dungeons & Dragons stuff is at youtube.com/geonerd79.
Yes, it is indeed. And you can find me online at twitter.com/msmithfilmblog, all of our podcasts at filmbook.com, and I got work at crookedmarquee.com as well. You can check that out. Thank you so much for listening to Complete Works. I'm Mike Smith. That's Mike DiCrescio. If you are listening to this review via our podcast on iTunes, you can subscribe to the podcast, rate it, take a moment to give us a review, support this podcast and Filmbook by taking part in our Patreon campaign. Check it out at patreon.com/filmbook. Feedback, compliments, topic discussions, hate mail, send that directly to podcast@filmbook.com. We would love to hear from you. Now join us in 2 weeks for another episode of The Complete Works, and we will be talking Nicolas Cage in the Philip K. Dick adaptation Next. Now, I've never seen Next. I've heard it's ridiculous, and yep. I'm pretty excited about it. Have you seen Next, Mike?
I think I have. Really? I feel like I must have. Yeah.
I know Julianne Moore is in it as well, Jessica Biel. Looking forward to it. I think it'll be a fun experience. Plus, you can keep an eye out for Film Bookcast. We are probably be talking Thor Ragnarok next week. And I've seen it. It's a blast. Mike, you haven't seen it yet?
Not yet, no.
Okay, but you're going to see it this weekend, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Yeah. Right. Now it's on the air, so you have to.
It's official now. It's for real.
All right. Thanks so much for listening, guys, and thanks for getting in the cage.